Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode, we pick up of our story on the Canton Bulldogs professional football team in 1906, where in part two of this story left off. It would be a roller coaster ride for the Bulldogs and professional football as well in the coming decade or so, and the story's coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we've taken a little bit of a break. We had a little bit of vacations and some things going on here this summer. But we are back into our story of the Canton Bulldogs professional football team. And we've covered parts one and part two. And as we learned in part two of this series on the Canton Bulldogs, the scandal and accusations of underhanded dealings by Captain Blondie Wallace and others of the Canton team left the squad in ruins. Their rival, the Massillon Tigers, were feeling the after effects of public embarrassment as well from their embroilment in the press of the alleged allegations against them. And it was all a matter of, did Wallace attempt to even succeed in a plot to pay off the Massillon players or to throw the game? Certainly the Tigers star Bob Shiring and Tiny Maxwell described the incident to authorities that they had been approached by Canton operatives to do as such and readily declined and then reported it. Our friend Greg Fusari, in his book who's titled Gridiron Legacy, Pro Football's Missing Origin Story, that will be out soon, has the story and all the details to describe this tale in a little bit more detail as far as Shiring and Tiny Maxwell. We'll leave that to him to tell that story. But the first sign of public opinion was the final scheduled game of the season for Canton against Latrobe, one that had been scheduled preseason, and one that Wallace and manager George Williams of Canton planned on being a real moneymaker to put the club into a profitable light at season's end. The PFRA's Coffin Corner publication article titled The Ohio Tiger Trap says that, quote, a crowd of 6,000 had been hoped for, but only a loyal 939 actually came to the park. The Bulldogs couldn't even cover the expenses of that, much less pay their players. Williams and Wallace blamed the scandal for the small crowd, but that was probably not the whole reason. Once the team lost to Massillon, most casual fans just lost interest, end quote. The loss of profit was devastating to the Bulldog organization. Players cannot be paid for their services they perform. Some were trapped with no way to get home to their home cities. The article from the PFRA states that even if the scandal had not broken, that the pro football in 1906 was doomed. Because these super teams like Massillon and Canton had been built, they were the only competitive and interesting squads around. No one wanted to watch either of them dismantle the lesser competitive teams they played. Then the only competition was playing each other, and that matchup would quickly lose its luster. The 1906 scandal propelled the inevitable, the collapse of professional football, at least as it had been operating in the last few years. Now, Wallace's reputation was so badly damaged that he could never again be in the limelight of football. His libel suit never made it to trial, but public opinion on what he was accused of was just too damaging to his reputation. As for professional football in Canton, Ohio, well, there would be none for years in the aftermath. Massillon, too, would suffer. One note to mention is that during the 1906 season, on October 25th, one of the Massillon players, Peggy Perrott, tossed what had been deemed as the first professionally thrown forward pass in the game's history. But back to Perrott in just a moment. The bug of pro football in Stark County was still alive. Now, people there missed the game and its excitement, as well as the rivalries with Massillon and Akron. That led to a revival some five-odd years later in 1911, where Canton finally fielded a new team, that they called the Canton Professionals. The team was made up of entirely local players, and the pay was undoubtedly very small. In their comeback season, the pros finished in second place in the standings behind Peggy Perrott and his new team, the Shelby Blues. The Canton 11 were slowly evolving and getting better each of the coming years, until in 1914, they were strong enough to challenge Perrott and his new squad in Akron for the Ohio State title. The leader of the professionals was a player named Harry Turner. Now, Canton defeated Perrott's new team, the Akron Indians, squad in their initial regular season meeting of the clubs. However, in the victory, they suffered what would be a devastating and tragic blow. The Canton squad's captain, Harry Turner, was so severely injured during the game while attempting to tackle Akron's Joe Collins. The pros on-field leader later died of a fracture to his spinal cord. According to Canton general manager Jack Kuzak, who was at Turner's bedside when he died, his last words were, quote, "I know I must go, but I'm satisfied, for we beat Peggy Perrott," end quote. Canton won the initial game with Shelby 6-0. However, that tragic death of Turner was taken hard by the team. It was the first fatal accident involving a major professional football team in Ohio. The professionals easily lost the rematch to the Indians a few days later, and the passing of Turner looked like another death knell for the Canton's pro football program. Kuzak, though, would do everything in his power to prevent the collapse of Canton football. In 1915, Jack made some changes. He robbed some of the top players from Akron and hired Olympic hero and former Carlisle Indian gridiron star Jim Thorpe for the sum of $250 per game. He also restored the traditional name of the Bulldogs as the moniker of the team. Maslin also revived their pro football team as the Tigers, and in 1915, the old rivals scheduled two games against each other. In the first meeting, Thorpe did not play, and the Tigers won handily 16-0. In game two, a few weeks later, Thorpe did play, and he dominated the game, providing all of the scoring in a 6-0 Bulldog victory. His talent, reputation, and experience were just what the Dogs needed, and they soon named him as their captain and coach. The best thing that was for he put butts in the bleachers. Now, Jack Kuzak had apparently done the impossible and revived the Canton Bulldogs team. In 1916, the Bulldogs went undefeated and smoked Maslin 24-0 in the process. Many recognized Canton as not only the best team in Ohio, but as the top professional gridiron squad in the nation. In 1917 was more of the same. The Bulldogs jumped out strong right from out of the chute, winning their first eight games to claim the mythical Ohio League title. Neither Canton nor Maslin fielded teams or played at all during the 1918 season because of World War I, of course, and the dreaded Spanish flu pandemic. Jack Kuzak left the team that year to pursue riches in starting up an oil business in Oklahoma. In his place stepped a local businessman, Ralph Hay, a successful auto dealer, who took over managing and owning the team. And that's where we're going to leave off in this segment of the Bulldog story. So look back here soon for more on Canton's football tale. And we hope you enjoyed this little bit of football history. Hope you enjoy us each and every day. We have something new coming out on Pigskin Dispatch. It's not always a podcast, though. It may be a video clip. It may be just a post on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And of course, we try to 3 or 4 times a week put some new podcasts out there for you as well. But don't worry, if you like the podcast, go to pigskindispatch.com. Every single day, there is a podcast that is reviving the history of that particular day. You can find it as a new post on Pigskin Dispatch daily. So, till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.